great guess. He built up a business over 30 years into a top five construction company in California. And he was so successful at it, and people are always asking him how he did it, and what his systems were. He now shares them with other people, and he's developed his own system, a visual business map that's out there helping people, and he calls it the High Five Business Building Map. And our guest is Mark Mays. Mark Mays, welcome to Confident ROI.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. It's High Five Priority Business Mapping.
I was wondering, I was just on a roll, man.
I'm not there to roll out for one time.
I got most of the words.
Yeah, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I'm really looking forward to sharing this time with you.
Well, great. Why don't you tell us about how you built your company and what lessons you learned in building it that you're sharing now with people?
You know, I'm the guy that went to school forever and ever and ever. But when people ask me, I tell them I'm an alumni of the School of Hard Knocks. And how I built my business was trial and error. You know, no employees, one employee. Next thing you know, you have hundreds of employees. And you learn the ebb and flow and best practices on how to manage and navigate through that. And constantly learning and growing, both managing the business and yourself as an individual, as a leader.
Can you remember a point when it was not looking good and you were struggling and you had to figure something out and how that ended up playing out?
Yeah. Most often those come around Fridays, right around payday. And it's, you know, when you got a commitment to make paychecks good and people that had commitments to your business didn't pay the invoice for whatever reason. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're the owner. You got to deal with it. So,
well, it's funny about payrolls. You know, it used to be the Monday after the Friday that was when the checks hit the fan, right?
Oh, yeah, right.
But with the direct deposit, now it's Wednesday at noon.
Yeah, exactly. Totally different element. And, you know, that is a great comparison on the change of dynamics in business, you know, those tools and resources.
Well, and now checks clear instantly, right?
Yeah, someone real goes time. Real time. So your accounting better be.
It is. I remember running a business and we were tight on cash and I got used to, it's only 250,000 exposure if the money doesn't come in that we're expecting. Yeah, it's not 400,000.
Yeah. No doubt about that.
You had some Fridays there where you're staring at the abyss. What types of things did you apply in the business that maybe you weren't doing that did start to lead to not having to worry about Fridays?
You know, I got to be transparent and tell you the number one thing for me, getting in touch with who I am and why I'm here, you know, and just my relationship with the Lord. And in that was a lot of learning, you know, just a lot of understanding what are best practices to getting out of where you're at and getting to where you want to be and what works and what doesn't work. And I'll tell you one thing that doesn't work is having the wrong attitude. You know, and seeing that, having the mindset that you can't instead of you can. And, you know, it's just a process of understanding how to connect those dots. And to be honest with you, I've yet to meet in my profession, I meet thousands of executives. I've yet to meet one that knew everything and could handle it no problem at all.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned that. We were talking about the financial bank accounts, but sometimes the emotional bank account is when those are overdrawn and your wife's had enough or your spouse has had enough of you. Yeah. That, okay, I guess we got to do something different.
Yeah. Something's got to change. That's insanity. And it's the same advice you'd give to anybody else, but now you're the guy that gives the advice and you're experiencing it. You know, and so sometimes it's just that test of faith of what we're made of. And you know what? For me, I can look back, thankful to be able to say I can look back. And say, you know, that's been some of my greatest growing points and understanding. I learned the stuff in school, but it didn't really resonate and become applicable till I was in the condition and needed to figure out how, like those five departments, how they tied together. You know, you could be busy as all get out in operations, getting it done, fulfilling all the commitments and promises. But if you're not at the same time paying attention to marketing and sales, you know, that you get an ebb and flow. And then you run out of work. You have all these great people that you finally trained to do it the best you've had it done. And you run out of work and they go away. And then you got to do the whole cycle again and train them and process them. And it's just, you know, and working through that. And that's kind of where this whole value came, and putting it together, this high five priority business mapping came from when we went to other offices. We used parts and pieces of it all the way through the whole business growth and how to manage no people, and then how do you manage hundreds of people. And taking it to that structure where we could then go start a mall out in Baton Rouge and go bring in people and set up an office there or acquire a business there and have them working from our format, not theirs. Because, you know, people are going to do what people do. They're going to take what the education and their belief system is, and they're going to conduct business. Well, when they're working for you, it's important that you help manage your way and get it in their vision map and have them understand it, so they're marching to your drum versus their drum.
Because you said a number of interesting things there. I mean, one is it sounds like you had to step back and kind of look at how things run, which when you're running a contracting business and time's money and you got to get the next project started and the first bill out there. And that's kind of counterintuitive to step back and look at the big picture on how your business flows. That's going to take time. Was that hard?
Wall to jump. It's a harder lesson. To learn. It's a harder muscle to train and strengthen. But yeah, you know, forever, I've just felt when I look at a project, and I would always tell our people, our direct reports, our entire team, that every project is really a business. And in the construction industry, it's clearly works. But in all industries, it works because it's a structure of intel of business. You know, it's fundamentally sound. It's not stuff that I reinvented. I'm just saying, look, if you were deliberate about realizing what your vision is, and you take these steps will net you the outcome sought. But most often the 80-20 rule comes into play, and you know, we get lost doing other things, and it's always that post-it note in our head and never gets traction.
And what helped you see the light in terms of, okay, I need to get our arms around the processes and how we do business?
You know, really the numbers. The numbers don't lie. And I'll tell you, for knowing the numbers and doing something about it is different. You know, it's clearly two different functions. And
well, the numbers are the result, right?
The process, how you get there. The forecast, or, you know, however you're using the numbers, but the numbers need to be accurate. But there's also another piece that you can even, as a CEO, we can see the numbers, but we can still not get ourselves out of the way to embrace what the numbers say. We have a greater drive for our validation of who we are, our ego, our attitude, or whatever causes that. It does exist. So to be cognizant of that and manage all the considerations to make the decision. So for me, it's just, I think the stress of money, you know, and having it cost me money to do a job, and why would that happen, and why don't we want that to happen, and how many jobs do you have to do to replace the money that you lost on one job? You know, it's a multiplier. So it's across the board in any business.
Yeah, no, I have a friend that always said, we're not practicing.
Yes.
And George often listens to this podcast, and George, I said, it's not practice. Yeah. We're not here practicing. Yeah. If you got a project or a business that's not making any money, it's not practice.
Yeah. And talk is not walk. Yeah. You know, as leaders, we gotta walk what we talk about. Otherwise, you know, it goes into those analogies. Inspect what you respect, cause inspect what you inspect what you expect causes respect.
Inspect what you expect, and that'll lead to respect.
Yes. Inspect.
I'm butchering a lot of your things today.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll get back.
No. It's good. Yeah. You know, you mentioned something interesting. You you were going to do a project. You're based in California, I'm assuming, but you're going to do a project in Louisiana. So you're talking about just buying a company in the, you know, thousands of miles away and implementing your way of doing business. Yeah. That, you know, in Louisiana is not exactly cutting edge. So you, yeah. can you walk us through a story on that? I mean, a lot of people are bombing out, buying a company and do business this way.
Yeah. And that's really what it is. And you know what? That's really a part of the peeling back the onion of business and who we are as leaders and understanding broader than we know. You know, before you ever do something like that, you only know this. Well, after you do it, you know a little bit more. And all those experiences and how they apply. And in that case, it was goes right back to the focus of what's the vision? What do you want to accomplish?
Yeah.
And then what is that look like in a goal? What are the, you know, the plan or the action steps to accomplish that goal? So I take that flow map, like we know, And then we apply it into a condition where you're in Baton Rouge or any place in Texas, wherever we were at. You go in the town, we'd need, you know, 100 employees. We didn't want to send 100 employees from California to where the projects were. So we would go into town. We would find the local competition that was in like businesses. We'd talk to them, understand what they were looking for, introduce this opportunity. And we had a couple of different ways they could get involved, whether it was through a shared venture of the contract agreement, so that would stimulate another contract, or it could be an acquisition of the business where they have a certain clientele, they're doing, you know, they have great resources or great contacts or power partners, but they're not executing correctly. And this structure worked great, so it would work for their other businesses.
But how did you convince them to do business your way?
Proven history, you know, just it works. There's just no denying it. Like anything else, it's about doing it, goal, plan, execute. You know, you think of the cubby.
Can you ever remember one kind of looking at you and go, well, it maybe happens to me. It's like they kind of look at me like, you know, we all know how to run our business down here.
All the time. That's the mindset all the way down to the labor force. And like anybody, so great example. So like anybody, we know what we know, and that works just fine for us. So we're not going to step, and we know that human nature to step out of our comfort zone is not normal operating procedure and is difficult, proven to be difficult when we do. So when you bring in this new or different methodology or mindset or perspective on business, it has to have proven facts, and the proven facts are the numbers. And the histories of, hey, this is what works. This is what happens. These, let's say in many cases, it was, this is the project. This is the pro forma. This is what the labor dollar allocations are for all of these items. These are the budgets. Here's the margins. If we can hit these margins, it pays this. When we can better outperform these margins, then you get this. And always having a shared interest or ROI, as we know it, in the program. And I don't care if it's one person or an entire company or, you know, as we see, entire cities and states.
Not everyone's alike. You know, sometimes
absolutely
people,
not.
Yeah, you know, that combination, you can see the mountain. Okay, we want to go over the mountain, but, you know, some people, there's a Prussian general, he'll come to me, but you know, he said that there was sometimes you order, you know, your general, your subordinate, you know, to take the hill, or you ask them, how would you do it? You know, there's different ways to do it. Was there any, because to me, that's one of the challenges is ingrained cultures. You know, you can explain the map and point it out, but how do you get that light bulb to go off and go?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, we're on board here. We get it.
Yes. Yeah, buy-in.
Besides like nodding, like, all right,
Okay, I'm going to go back to my desk and listen to what I was listening to, and we'll meet again next week. And buy-in. To me, it's emotional buy-in. And being able to, that's why having a plan is so important, because once you have the plan together and you can share and communicate that with the team, and I don't mean just employees, you want to share it with all parties involved, you know, vendors, resources, you know, any touch that's involved, you want to let them know about what that plan is. Because like any plan, you want to create that excitement about it. You want to be able to let everybody know in the plan what part they play. So having that structure of this is who's doing what, when, and how, once that's set into place, then you can focus on the mindset of the individuals, which creates the culture of the organization. And when you can have that in a dynamic, rewarding, positive, and proactive environment, like it should be, like it's meant to be, then it's harmonious. And I don't know, the comparison for me in corporate executive world is it's like playing softball and being on an all-star team and watching somebody throw a triple play or watching people do great things on the field, and they're feeding off of everybody's energies. If you've ever done that as a child, and I tell you, I've been coaching my kids for years and years and years, that same approach and philosophy is the same thing in the boardroom. I'm telling you, different mindset, different focus and conversation, but the same practices and fundamentals.
Well, I can see you lighting up over that. And you talk about, I want to start talking about the high five priority business mapping. And yes, a prominent feature on this, and they can go to your website that will have maysandassociates.com.
Yes, or maysllc.org. Mm-hmm. Either one of them will get you to the same place.
They'll be in the show notes.
Yes.
And you talk about culture, or you've using the metaphor oil. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. I believe it's the difference of, and this is just an analogy, so it's like being able to, like in a car, or like in race teams, you see like race teams, they know how valuable oil is to an engine and how it can do all these great additional things. Well, same as if you go in and you buy a blue wrap special 49-cent can of oil, or you go out and you get the Lucas quality brand $10 a quart oil. There's those that will grab that 49-cent a can and not understand the value of the other oil. And they don't understand that if they pay that $10 increase now, it saves them thousands down the road. Well, it's the same kind of mindset of being able to, is what's the oil like? Do you have good culture in your organization? Are your people upbeat, proactive, and focused, communicated and rewarded, and given the resources they need to do the job you expect? Or is it just the 49-cent can of oil? Come in, do your job, they punch the ticket, they go to their desk, they get on their social media, they start their computer, and they're doing their blending what serves them instead of...
Yeah, how do you get the Lucas oil in a company?
It's by understanding who they are. You know, we hire people from resumes. We go through a specific process, hopefully, that qualifies the right client. Well, that client we hire is not the client that shows up at the door every day. Trust me. And nothing, it's human nature. And we've got to embrace what is human nature and not try to overchange that with authority and arrogance, because we can't see good with those glasses on. So if you take that off and put on some glasses of humility and goal-driven and just say, look, how do I get from here to there? Understand who you're dealing with. You know, I think like business, people are puzzle shapes, and how do they fit to the shape of the position within the organization is really important, and how to manage that culture and lift them up instead of weigh them down.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's take our first quick break here, and then we can dive a little deeper in culture, maybe some examples of it in the real world.
Awesome.
There is a magazine that accompanies this show. So if you want to stay up to date on the latest ideas and trends, you don't have to just tune in every week. You can turn on to the new magazine that accompanies it, Confident ROI. Discover the right tool to improve your company and read articles like the one in the latest issue from Vern Harnish, the famous Vern Harnish on strategy, or top grading with Dr. Brad Smart. There's even a cure for your hiring headache in there, and even information on systems like the EOS system that we've talked about so many others times here on this show and others. All of that and more you can read confidently to find out real-life tools to improve your company and take it to the next level. Just go find it. It's free. That's right. The four-letter word, F-R-E-E, at confidentroi.com. Just like it sounds, Confident R-O-I.
Thanks, Paul. We're talking with Mark Mays and how he built his construction company over 30 years and how he took the lessons from there. And now he's sharing them with other companies and helping them build better businesses. Mark, we were talking before the break about culture, and it's like an oil within an organization. Can you give us some example or story about how the power of culture in a business?
Oh, yes. Yes. So many experiences. You know, you go into a new office, I can say like in our Arizona office, setting it up there, the mindset of the culture of the people in that town were different. I think we started in Tucson, and it was just a different way of life, a different level, different list of priorities and values. And, you know, I'm sure it worked great for them, but we didn't bid the projects that way. So we'd come down there and we'd expect apples and they would deliver pears. So it was about understanding, how do I get that way? You know, how do I get from where I'm at to where I want to go? And, you know, for me, my natural tendency is to speak louder and longer and with more authority. And that, you know, I now know that's not the best practices, but, you know, we get in those spots, we do what we know to do. And that's been a journey for me, you know, always learning what's the best way to do it, not necessarily my way. And trust me, my way has always been really, really important to me.
So they down in Tucson, they kind of had a different way. I'm guessing maybe it was a little slower than California pace and all that, right?
I can tell you, we had this one experience. I came in the town. It was at our first month-end meeting. And the production schedules on paper that I was looking at from California were just, I'd look at it one week, it was becoming, you know, it was out of line, then it become worse or worse. And I come to this meeting and I'm talking to our leader out there saying, what's going on? You know, do this, this, and this. And I'm doing that. It's not working. And I get there and I come in like I've been telling him over the phone, if you just, you know, put one and one together, you end up with two. Come on, do it. Just do it. I get there and I meet these people and it's like turning a battleship with an Evinrude. You go in there and say, you guys aren't doing it right. You got to get this done. Well, you don't understand. This is hunting season. We got passes. When we got passes on those days, we got to go. So we'll show up after hunting season, you know, during the times we go. And they were not changing it. Absolutely not. I don't care how much money you paid them. That's just the way they did it. So we learned how to adapt communication and schedule and leadership with conditions and people. And those days we weren't scheduled to work on the job, but we worked like crazy the days before and worked like crazy the days after to make up. But knowing and setting that into the parameters of the leadership was a game changer.
So you guys were dealing with pre-millennials before there were millennials then.
Yeah. That's a whole different conversation, but same idea. When we understand what they hear, we can better speak to them. But when we're so focused on speaking the way we want to speak, our message isn't absorbed. So often it's like speaking Spanish when you're in an audience of people from Switzerland. You know, they're just not going to get it. Could be great content, but how are they going to apply it if they can't understand it?
Yeah. So you were able to not necessarily say, okay, we won't work during hunting season. You were able to get them to willing to work harder before and after to bridge, to still bring the project on time.
Great question. Because no, there's more to it than that. Because you can't just go to them. I mean, because like back to leadership, our walk and our talk is so important to keep aligned, because if we don't, they don't respect it. Back to that respect love part. They don't buy into it. So when you meet with them, you can't just succumb to them, because now you're teaching them a whole nother lesson. Anything that comes up, this is how we'll react. It wasn't that way. It was and this didn't happen the first time or every time the same way, but it was the process of going through it, of saying, look, we understand what matters to you. This is what matters to us. We pay you handsomely to care about what matters to us, and we need people on our team that does. So we showed them that, like any process, any condition, we showed them the value for, and how do we find the way to instead of the way not to. And we worked through it, you know, and it was, some guys didn't want to work more hours before, and those guys were not in our A list of people on performers.
Okay.
You know, and that's.
So you rewarded ones that wanted to work with the program. Or were willing to work.
Yes. Those were the people that were valuable to our program. And those were the people we wanted to have on our program. And that in itself was years of lessons on how to refine that, because it doesn't always go perfect, but you have to be aware of what's working and that what's not working, which goes back to the numbers.
So on the high five priority business mapping, you talk in a couple of spots about a company's greatest asset is a passionate workforce.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's easy to say, right? But it's another thing to take a neutral or non-neutral workforce. How do you make them passionate? How do you develop a passion? Can you give an example or, you know, a situation where you didn't have a passionate workforce? It's one thing to start with a passionate workforce, and it's another thing like, okay, how do we get there?
Well, let's go back to that same condition where effort and understanding was not clear in Tucson. We needed a certain level of production, and we were used to a certain level of production and work hours. That was not their norm. So to change it to ours had to have a motivational reasoning for it. So we had to create some type of, like anything, incentive-based program that caused them to want to make the effort. And then once they're making the effort and they see the reward, then that creates the momentum, and they grow from that. They want more, they can have more. You know, you get people that come in your door and they say, well, I want to make $50 an hour and that's what I'm used to making, so therefore pay me $50 an hour. And as an owner, you know, look at the smile. And you know as well as I do, well, gee, I'd like to pay you $100 an hour, but this is what you got to do to make it. Can you? Or to create it? Can you? Because we're not a finance company.
Right. Well, so was it incentive the key to building a passionate workforce? I mean, what are some of the tools to build passion in the workforce?
Tools
work for you.
I'm saying understanding the audience, understanding what you're working for, and don't be so closed-minded that you can't hear them, or don't be so closed-minded in your vision that you can't understand their vision, because you want to share that. I can think oftentimes, I can't tell you how many homes were bought through employees by sitting down and caring with them. We had a practice that we used to do every year, where we'd pull our people in and ask them what their goals were. What did they want to accomplish? And then we'd meet with them, whatever timelines they wanted. Most often it was every other week. And just touch up, what are you doing? We'd create the plan with them, give them the plan, and then we'd just hold accountability to, what did you do to do this? Whether it's buying a refrigerator, replacing washers and dryers, whatever it was just helping them understand that, hey, if I get it on the radar, it's much more apt to happen. That's the first aha. And then when you're doing something, when you're being proactive instead of reactive, and you're doing something about it, you're being efficient towards the success of it. And you're not wasting all these resources and energy and all the other things over the worry of reactive. Why didn't it go right in the first place? If you're deliberate about what you want the outcome to be, your stats and percentages go through the roof in accomplishing that.
So it was taking a proactive interest in the employees' lives. You know, what was important to them? If someone needed to buy a new fridge for their wife, you know, okay, let's help you get that done in just terms of planning, not necessarily.
Yeah, what matters to them, you know, and how to keep their shared interest with what our vision was. And not over the top, because you've got to be disciplined. You've got to provide leadership and direction for the people. But this is what's expected of you here. Define what you want on your own personal plan, and we'll support you in that as well.
All right. You also talk in the plan, in the map, about the culture being valuable, and you can't leave something like that to chance, and being deliberate about your culture, your oil that you want in your business. Can you give an example of how you did that, or you've helped your clients be deliberate with their culture?
In our current clients now, or in that?
Anytime.
Well, I can think of when you just brought that topic up, the first thing that came to my mind was a time within our construction days where our company had grown to a size of having so many employees. I was kind of a strong-willed leader, and there was an awareness that I had an event actually at a Christmas party where an employee, one of our office staff, shared with me this statement and said, we were out on the balcony, big party going on inside, hundreds of people there. And she says to me, Mark, you know what? We all love you for the way you are to us, but you'll never be us. And it really set me back to think about that and to own the truth of that. And really, it's because they don't want you to be. We all need clarity and vision and leadership. And I think that's really, really important to be deliberate about that. At all levels, whether it's the high five, whether it's the process, whether it's the person you meet in the street, at the store, at the gas station, at the freeway off ramp.
Yeah, it's that clarity. But the people want that clarity.
Yes, yes. And then, I don't think so. But how do you speak to those people?
Yeah, yeah. And was that something that was that part of going from the abyss of how we're going to make payroll to okay? This, the culture and the vision is part of how we're going to be able to never have to worry about making payroll.
No, that experience, if I'm understanding what you're saying, that experience, or you want to restate it?
Well, it's just in terms of, was that one of the key things that helped move the company away from having to worry about it by having the right culture, by having articulating it?
Made all the difference in the world in the numbers. Mm-hmm. And I could say, as an overall statement of 30 years of business, I could say a Salmation statement would be absolutely. But you could look at it just like you could look at quarterly reports. And based on the numbers and the attitudes of the people, you could clearly see how they could coincide and the similarities to them. And the reason I shared that story was because at that point in time, it helped me to understand the separation of visioning, of being able to say, this is how we want it to be, and to help everybody reach a new common level instead of a separate idea of culture. Pulling them together, saying, look, here's what we're focused on. How can I reward you? What matters to you? But this is our business, and I am the owner and the leader.
And so you start having conflicting cultures within the company.
Well, as the headcount came up, you know, because the attitude, the culture is based on the mindset, and the mindset is what comes in every morning. So you have people that you hired that had a great stat, you know, great attitude and all this, these other things. But, you know, for the last 3 months, maybe a family member has been sick or something's been going on. So being able to be in touch with the people that are on your team, not be so far above them you can't understand them is what I'm speaking to. But to be deliberate, to understand that they are separate than you. We all want to be together, and we are all people together. But at the end of the day, you're the one that's the owner and responsible for those checks being good. So
Right. Just like that.
And at the end of the day, they'll go where they need to go.
When you were talking there about, well, I think one of the aspects that you have on your map with the culture is the vision. You also had the mindset and the action. And can you explain those?
Yeah.
How those come to fruition or come to fruition for you in a business?
Yeah. Again, I'm an alumni of the School of Hard Knocks. So it's learning the value of it. The first time was a scratch. And then the second time was a scuffed knee. And the third time was maybe a sprained ankle or a broken arm, you know, that kind of progression to get to that point. But I just think it's really important when you can establish what is the expectations, closing off on culture, when you can establish what is the expectations of the culture in the organization and speak to that and share that and have curriculum in your management that surfaces that, little exercises, little rewards. And
can you give an example of an exercise? I mean, like Walmart, they used to do the, Sam Walton used to do the cheer. Every Saturday morning, he would go to stores and they do the Walmart cheer. And it got them, and they would do this routine.
We used to have, it was management, morning management by walking around. You know, that was my first 15-minute meeting every day to walk around and walk through the offices and cubicles and find out who's doing what and how. Really just asking an opening question to let them throw out how they're feeling today. And then to be cognizant of what's going on.
Right. And how do you kind of bind them? You can go there and you can check in with them, but how do you... In some ways, culture is binding, right? It's that.
Yes, yes. But the binding of caring is a cultural group. So to go in and do your normal procedure and then to go back to your desk and send a quick email, say, hey, I was just feeling something might be troubling. If there's anything troubling you, if there's anything you'd like to talk about, you know, contact me or let me know. And again, then you have to manage that because you don't want to get in too deep and be overstated, but you really want to be committed and to understand. You want them to care about your vision. They want you to care about theirs. So just how to manage that and to create that culture, just like on a softball team, we use that analogy where people care about each other. They understand that success takes a village that's seldom accomplished by one person.
And how do you do that? How do you do that? You had an organization of hundreds. How do you do that throughout the organization? You are spread out across states. I mean, do you have to rely on your team as well to do that? And how do you know they're really doing it?
By procedure, by having a procedure that you've identified, you've already validated that this works and that you have buy-in as a leader. And then it needs to be clear, like anything, it needs to be documented. That's the piece of taking a vision and turning it into goals. Those processes have to be documented and laid out so you can get third-party buy-in.
But did you ever get that kind of that, you know, from your superintendents, what do you mean, Mark? I mean, I got this job and everything. Now I got to ask them about whether they want a they need a refrigerator or not. I get it, but, you know, we got a deadline. We're going to get penalized if we're not done. And,
Oh, all the time. You know, that whole, once you start developing the benefits of being able to be deliberate, your list starts going from the easy, you do the easy ones first, and then it starts getting more complicated, like the smiles and the, just like you're saying, being so wore out to still be required to walk through the end of the job, clean the job up and talk to the superior, the client, if anybody's on the job and say, thank you for the opportunity or whatever our communication was, but to do it with a happy heart opposed to being wore out and tired and frustrated and angry or whatever they're carrying it. But that's being deliberate about the culture. And it doesn't have to be complicated. You want to keep it simple. And just, you know, we have a form that we use where we break down. We literally have a silhouette on the center of this form. And on the left side, we identify when we go into an organization, we identify with them, what is our current culture? And we have, we fold the form in half. And we have them take the moment and write down, and they you get some really good, honest answers. And then we flip it over and we say, what is the culture we'd like to have? The same lines, the same understanding. And then you'd be surprised what they're clarifying that they want to have happen. And that's where buy-in comes, because when you ask them and then you take their input and you melt it into what yours, the believed one is, and then you get validation from them, then you have buy-in to the culture. And I tell you, in a business, there's not enough profit to fully pay that ticket that you can get by those correct actions.
Right. Okay. I mean, that makes sense. So yeah, flipping of the form, you know, what is the culture? Okay. Turn the page. What should it be?
Yeah. Yeah. What do we have? What do we want? Because it goes back to my statement. What does perfect look like?
And you're dealing with construction superintendents and you know, they got to crack the whip. Did talking about culture with them, did that resonate? Did it take
a few times? It's transferable. You know, you work in an office one day, or you work in an office and you see two people come in every day, and one of them comes in with a smile and is always happy, and the other one comes in all bitter. And you find out from both of them, which one do you think you're going to emulate? Which one do you think is going to attract your attention and your understanding? You're going to want more. I want some of what he has. I think of that that movie with the comedian. I can't remember. And they're in a restaurant and she's talking about something. And Robin Williams is in the movie. And they're in a diner and she's eating something and she's making all these moans and stuff. And everybody in the restaurant's looking at her.
I think it's Harry Met Sally. And that
yes,
movie.
Yes. And somebody says, I'll have what she's having.
It's not Robin Williams. It's what's his name? Who did the Oscars a bunch of times. Anyways, well, it'll come to us.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. And,
yep.
And a good attitude is catchy.
Yep. All right, let's take a good attitude's catchy. Let's take our last break and then we'll finish up. We'll finish up going through the high five priority business mapping.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
That's right, because we can't put off this final commercial anymore. It's coming right at you. That's the webinar that's coming up on September 18th. At 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, a couple hours earlier in Hawaii. You can sign up for this webinar at confidentroi.com. And what will you hear? Well, they'll discuss how to uncover the hidden force pulling companies into dysfunction and creating frustration. Ouch. How to implement straightforward tools to identify and remove the real source of that pain. And they'll talk about and explore eliminating the most common behavior that keeps a company from becoming an unstoppable force. Powerful thoughts, interesting conversation. You can join in on this webinar, free webinar, September 18th, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Simply sign up at confidentroi.com. And if you happen to hear it later, if you're listening to this as a podcast, you say, darn, I missed that thing. Hey, we'll record it. It'll be on confidentroi.com along with the rest of these shows and the magazine. Lots of stuff, lots of reasons to go there. Confidentroi.com.
Thanks, Paul. And we're here with Mark Mays, and we've been talking about the high five priority business mapping. And Mark, what can you share with the people listening in about kind of some of the key aspects of this business mapping? I like it. I like anything that's visual, because so much in the business improvement world is abstract and you got to tie these concepts in your head. And now you got a map. What could you share with our listeners there about your high five priority business mapping?
You know, it just works. It's proven to work. It's not a question of, will it? And as a business owner, it's really important to be able to start with the end in mind. And if when you break down, just everything about this makes sense and has been proven through studies, through educational studies, research that's gone on, all the way down to those colors. Those five colors on the design are not there by chance. they all mean exactly something. And we start off looking at the yellow, which is marketing. And if you think about it, through these five components, you could almost put your hand out and say, this is almost the flow of business. And I'll elaborate that after I make the statement. But marketing is the number one in the five.
Mark, before we go in there, can you give an example of a company that's implemented it? You don't have to use their name, but you know, just what they saw, you know, what they were facing and how it helped them?
Sure. I think back, the first thing that pops to my mind is a construction company. But you know what's funny is that
construction companies do not have the luxury of time.
Yeah.
They got to get it right or they will be out of business.
Yeah. And that's what this is all about, because this whole visual setting, once you set the vision and the map and identify those things, once that's done, you're managing this entire program by one page, one piece of paper, an 8.5 by 11 that is a task-driven form that has certain boxes and information that allows it to be distributed through the entire system of managing this. So you can drill down into any part of it at any one time, but it keeps everybody back to that 8.5 by 11. What's expected? What are the tasks?
Right. So you're telling about the construction company, you know,
it's the structure. You know, they do business the way they know to do business. 78% of the businesses in the world start from operations. They're good widgets makers, and then they are drawn into business. They're really good at their craft, but they don't understand those other four components. So when you can embrace how these work in a business, it can take you from not knowing to knowing. And in the application of the construction company is that, and this is so typical, they're good at their craft, but they're not good at managing people. They're good at their craft, but they're not good at managing financial needs and conditions. They're good at their craft, but they're not good at marketing. They're good at their craft, but they're not good at sales. The reason they have sales is because they do good work. And their business was created by doing one job and then somebody telling a friend and then doing another job, or, you know, the process that it goes through to create a business. Well, all of a sudden you wake up and now you are a business. So you need to function like a business, because it's not enough, because you're the owner and the financial responsible party. It's not enough to just say, gee, boss, I made a mistake. Do I make another one?
Yeah. So you're talking about that construction company
and how it applied it.
Yeah. What were they facing?
They went into, in this particular case, the one that's coming to mind is that they went into a project. They were really happy they got the job. Well, they get out and find out that the reason they got the job was because they missed something. So then it's this panic of, oh my gosh, I'm contracted to do this $1.2 million worth of work now, and it's going to cost me $1.4 million to get it done. How am I going to do that and be around afterwards? So it's understanding, well, first you go back to the beginning, like anything else. How did you bid the project? And you rebid the project. And there's processes that you can do that are right in alignment with this is, you know, the goal, plan, execute. What do we want to do? We want to trim off $0.2 million on this bid build cost budget so we can get the job done and stay in business. So how do we do that? Well, there's elements that you do by rebidding the project, finding out, rebuying it out beforehand, getting more competitive in the buyout processes, but being deliberate to know you need to do that in the beginning versus the end.
Right. So you help them relook at the system, helped them relook at their bidding process. Any other things they were able to implement and help?
Yeah, and it created efficiencies throughout the whole organization. They brought us on because of that problem. They took on a job and they were upside down and it was going to put them out of business. And the net result was going back in immediately and finding how can we tighten up these numbers across the board. And we started where I just spoke to, but then we went into what are the elements of vendor costs and how can we reduce those, which teed up negotiation and power partner relationships, which teed up being able to relook at our allocations on overhead costs and to find out their allocation was based on a percentage, not by factual numbers. Well, you and I know you can't, I understand you have to do that, but you have to know that the numbers are accurate in order to do that. So it helped implement financial changes that drew structure and reporting that gave them that information to be able to manage too.
And did you have to, did they have to evolve their culture?
Yes. We had to take that culture and say, look, we, in the beginning, now it looked like we were going to need, we've typically been picking 5 apples a day. Now we need you to pick 15 apples a day. Of course, that puts a test on the culture. How do we get it and not lose the culture that we've grown to this point? And if you have no culture, you have to start with the momentum of it, getting it started. So it's really tough to go with a, to a team of I don't care about my company, just give me my paycheck, and get them to do that. But when you have a culture that can embrace and understand that, hey, the leadership here is showing us that this is how we can take us from risk to reward. Of course, we want to do that. And then they have the whiff of what's in it for me. And I say that's a millennial statement I've learned. I'm not going to apply it. I'm just going to say I've learned that through the millennials of what's in it for me. So you got to be able to show them that.
Have you ever had any times when the owner or the CEO, they didn't really want to address the culture?
Yes, most often. Most often. That's the value of bringing in an outside resource.
Yeah.
And that's exactly, that's that story I told you when that employee told me that out on the balcony. That's what caused me to go to hiring a consultant. Never before would I do that because I didn't like it. When they left, so did the magic.
And right.
They're expensive. So after
why did you feel you needed a consultant when the person said you'll never be one of us?
Because I thought I was. I thought I had that connection with them.
Ah, okay. I took it somewhere different. I thought they were saying, hey, you're our leader. You're not one of us. You're our leader. We look at you differently. You're saying, hey, we're not connected.
She was explaining the ingredients of her perspective. Not to say that it's right, wrong, or indifferent, but just to clue me in on, you know, the understanding of communication between them and myself and them, and how do they perceive. You know, because it's our intention is not always our outcome. And when we can embrace that with being okay, you know, but be aware of it, that's really, really important in leadership.
But have you ever been sitting with a owner of a company and saying, your culture's horrible? And they go, no, it's not. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's like any company.
I don't approach it that way. Look at it as more, there's great opportunity in improving the culture of the organization. And then you can support it with facts. When we identify, would it be something they desired? Because it's obvious, and that's dollars, a dollar return on pennies of effort to make that change. So, you know, and then you support it. Well, is good culture this? No. And we go through that same list. What is goal? Then we do it the other way. What does good culture look like? Boom, 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 boom. And then we do it and we flip it over and say, what do we have here? Mm-hmm. And then it's not so pretty, but it's still the reality check. And that's what we've got to get out of we got to get our own self out of the way.
Sure, sure. Okay. Well, we've covered a lot today, and fortunately it's come to the end of our block and Paul's giving me the wrap up sign, but how can people get a hold of you? Anything you'd like to share in addition with people here before we wrap up?
You're not alone. It's important to remember that when we were in school, we were learning. And when we get out of school, we don't want to stop learning. We want to be cognizant of that and constantly feed ourselves with knowledge. And then I would say that most oftentimes, small business owners will say, I just can't afford a consultant or an outside resource. And I will tell you back to two things. If you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. I didn't make that up. Dr. Wayne Dyer is the one that created that statement, but I've embraced that for 20 years. And I will say to you that you really can't not afford to do it. Because like in this important matter of culture that we speak to, it's so important that you can't take the chance of doing it wrong. And you can't take the chance of the expense of doing it wrong or not managing it. And when you bring in somebody that's experienced with doing that, they can get straight to the chase. They can be proactive and dynamic and feed the culture instead of being reactive and breaking down the culture.
Great. All right. And where can they reach you?
I can be reached. You can email me at mmaes@maesllc.org. You can go to our website at maesllc.org, or you can go to our website at maesandassociates.com. Contact me, reach out.
You got a cruise coming up, right? Learning cruise?
Oh, no, the Shelley's Luminary Leaders is putting together. They're involved in that.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the details of it. That's something Shelley could probably speak to.
All right.
Yeah, we do a lot of just workshops where we can put, get this information inside of people's minds, and just that consideration. It turns on lights.
I think you got a cruise, but I think that the workshop is coming to a cruise near you. Yeah. So yeah. You don't even know what your people are creating for you. You're going to be. So, well, thanks for coming on, Mark. It's been great.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, and look forward to hearing how it's going.
Awesome. You have a great day. Thank you, Alex.
You too, Mark. Talk to you later.